Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's the middle of the week. It's December 10th. It's a Wednesday. Great to be with you here on EWTN's Catholic Connection. Hope it's going well for you so far, moving through Advent. I almost said Lent. I don't know why, but it's Advent. We have a great show for you, as always. We do our very best to keep you connected, hence the name of the program. Father Mark Mary Ames is going to be joining us in the first hour this morning, shortly after the news and the weather, to discuss his book, Eight Promises of God. Of course, it's about the Beatitudes, so we will discuss. I love diving into Scripture and getting different perspectives from different experts, so this will be, I think, interesting, but I'm sure very enlightening as well, and maybe even some fun. We'll try to have a good time in terms of being joyful with our faith. So Father Mark Mary Ames, the book, Eight Promises of God. And then, of course, because it's a Wednesday, our dear sister Joan Lewis will have all the news from the Vatican and Rome. Prior to that, though, speaking of Italy, it is Wednesday, which means at the bottom of the hour, we take you to Italy, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, based on my best-selling EWTN book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders. So today I'm going to take you to Umbria for some very special events for Christmas and the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. So down in Rome, of course, we know that on Monday, the Holy Father went to the Spanish Steps, which is a long tradition in Rome with the popes, and there is a beautiful obelisk there. On top is the statue of the Blessed Mother, and they place this beautiful wreath around the statue, and there's prayers and there's song and a message from the Pope. Well, they do some beautiful things all over Italy for the Feast of the Immaculate Conception because it's a national holiday here in Italy, and it's a very important day, of course, on the Catholic calendar in a very Catholic country. And it's really interesting to see how they mark the beginning. They consider the Immaculate Conception the start of Christmas. Advent, of course, too, but in terms of the Christmas season, it doesn't really get started here in Italy. So you won't see any lights, a few here and there. You won't see all kinds of Christmas decorations prior to the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, which I really appreciate because I don't know about you, but in the United States, we are pushing Christmas starting in July, right? And the music starts in Halloween. And so by the time Christmas comes around, some people have been basta, they've had it. But here it is still very special. And then there's some amazing engineering feats to mark the Christmas season, including the world's largest outdoor Christmas tree, and also the world's largest Christmas tree on the water, both of which are taking place in Umbria during the Christmas season, and so we'll explain. That's coming up in Shrines and Wonders. So that is the first hour of the program. Again, the book, Eight Promises of God, written by our first guest, Father Mark Mary Ames, and then Shrines and Wonders and our own Joan Lewis with the news from the Vatican. Let's take a look at the weather and see what's happening across the country. The National Weather Service says there's a prolonged atmospheric river continuing to bring gusty winds, heavy rainfall, and that rainfall, they're saying, could lead to urban and river flooding with possible landslides now and heavy intermountain snow. This is over the Pacific Northwest, moving into the Rockies through tomorrow. And then we have a clipper that's crossing the Great Lakes in the Northeast into tomorrow as well, with areas of moderate to heavy snow and mixed wintry precipitation. So some rough weather hitting parts of the country as we move through Advent. We'll keep you posted if anything changes. It is a Wednesday morning, and thank you so much for listening to EWTN. And say some prayers for Sacred Heart Radio, our wonderful affiliate, of course, producing the Sunrise Morning Show with Anna Mitchell and Matt Swaim. They have their membership drive today. So if you're in the Cincinnati area, don't forget to support them. We have to support our affiliates and EWTN because we work together hand in hand, arm in arm, to bring you 24/7 Catholic radio. It is 4 minutes past the hour. Let's take a look and see what's happening in the news on a Wednesday morning. Pope Leo is calling for what he says is a just and lasting peace in Ukraine. Reporter Molly Hunter tells us a leader of the Catholic Church meeting with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Italy yesterday.
They spoke broadly about ending the war, but they also spoke specifically about an issue that we know Pope Leo cares about, that we know is one of the most sensitive issues for President Zelensky, and that is the deportation, the kidnapping, the unlawful transfer of Ukrainian kids to Russia.
In a statement, the Vatican saying the Holy Father reiterated the need for a continuation of dialogue. Zelensky saying he told the Pope about diplomatic efforts of the U.S. to achieve peace. Zelensky traveling to Italy following a trip to London to meet with the leaders of the U.K., France, and Germany. Meanwhile, commenting on what he has seen of the U.S. president's peace plan for Ukraine, the Holy Father said it appears that unfortunately what was for many years a true alliance between Europe and the U.S. could undergo a huge change. Speaking to reporters in Castel Gandolfo, just outside Rome, yesterday evening, the Holy Father responding to questions on different issues, including the ongoing peace proposal for the Russia-Ukraine war put forward by U.S. mediators.
Would you tell us, please, what do you think about Trump's peace plan for Ukraine? Do you think it's fair?
I'd rather not comment on it. I haven't read the whole thing. I think, unfortunately, some of parts of it that I have seen make a huge change in what was for many, many years a true alliance between Europe and the United States. The remarks that are made about Europe, also in interviews recently, I think are trying to break apart what I think needs to be a very important alliance today and in the future. So it's a program that President Trump and his advisors put together. And he's the president of the United States, has a right to do that. It has a number of things in it that I think, while perhaps many people in the United States would be in agreement, I think many others would see things in a different way.
Asked about the role of the Holy See in bringing back abducted children from Ukraine, the Holy Father confirming he had discussed that issue as well with the Ukrainian leader. The bankruptcy case involving the Archdiocese of New Orleans is finally at an end. U.S. District Judge Meredith Grabil has approved a settlement for that area of the country in Louisiana, including a $230 million package for survivors of clergy sexual abuse. Survivor Tim Trahan says he's relieved.
Pain and the suffering that I've been through will now enable me just to be a stronger person.
The Archdiocese filing for bankruptcy in 2020 in the face of hundreds of abuse claims. A new lawsuit is aiming to stop Delaware's End of Life Options Act from becoming law. The legislation was signed by the Democratic governor back in May and would allow terminally ill adults with less than 6 months to live to choose medical aid in dying. A local TV station reports the plaintiffs include several disability and patient advocacy groups arguing doctors are not required to help a patient obtain alternative services to medical aid in dying, adding the Americans with Disabilities Act to patients with life-threatening disabilities. 11 states and Washington, D.C., so far in the country, have what's called or referred to often as physician-assisted suicide. One student is dead, another is hurt after a shooting on Tuesday at Kentucky State University. The Frankfort Police Department says a suspect is in custody, now facing murder and assault charges. He's identified as an Indiana man who does not attend the school. The school has canceled classes for the rest of the semester, and Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear is asking for prayers for all those impacted by the shooting. Mark Mayfield tells us President Trump is kicking off his national tour, touting his economic agenda with a campaign rally-style speech that took place in Pennsylvania.
Trump spoke to a large crowd of supporters in Mount Pocono Tuesday night, saying his administration saved America.
They gave you high prices. They gave you the highest inflation in history. And we're bringing those prices down rapidly. Lower prices, bigger paycheck.
The president went on to say that his tariffs have brought in trillions to the U.S. and pushed companies to invest in American manufacturing once again. Polls show Americans say affordability is out of control and a majority of voters are starting to blame Trump. The White House says Pennsylvania is one of several stops planned across the country where Trump will talk about the economy. I'm Mark Mayfield.
President, meanwhile, says he's not ruling out sending troops to Venezuela. Asked about the possibility in an interview with Politico, Trump saying, I don't comment on that. I wouldn't say that one way or the other. He also said the Venezuelan president's days are numbered. Tensions between the U.S. and Venezuela have escalated since the Trump administration began conducting military strikes on alleged drug boats in the Caribbean. Trump telling Politico he would consider taking similar action on Mexico and Colombia to reduce fentanyl trafficking. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis is being threatened with a lawsuit after designated one of the country's largest Muslim groups as terrorist. DeSantis says the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, is a foreign terrorist organization. He looks forward to a court battle.
But we welcome that. I mean, you know, we did do the designation for both the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE. This is something that has been a long time coming. I know the federal government's now working in a similar direction.
DeSantis also saying there is a strong basis for the terror designation.
There's no question. A lot of it is financial. That's why I think a lawsuit is something that we very much welcome. That will give the state of Florida discovery rights to be able to subpoena the bank records.
The governor's executive order alleges that CARE has ties to Hamas, a militant Palestinian group that attacked Israel back on October 7th of 23. The group is also involved in the filing of a federal lawsuit against the Texas Governor Greg Abbott after he declared the Texas CARE chapter a foreign terrorist organization. Two brothers in South Jersey now facing very serious charges from Homeland Security after what the agency says were threats posted against ICE on social media. Ricardo Antonio Roman Flores and his twin brother Emilio, both arrested yesterday near Atlantic City. The Homeland Security says the brothers posted online threats to shoot ICE on site. They also claim the pair threatened a DHS assistant secretary. Agents and local police using a SWAT team to arrest them. Emilio is charged with two weapons counts, criminal coercion, cyber harassment, and more. They're both charged with conspiracy to make terrorist threats. And Congress is trying to tackle the growing problem of online predators. Yesterday, the Senate Judiciary Committee held a bipartisan hearing on protecting children from online sexual predators, hearing emotional testimony from parents such as Tamia Woods, whose kids committed suicide after being what's known as sex-torted.
We can make sure that we have your back no matter what. I would give anything to have my son back.
Tamia Woods' 17-year-old son committing suicide after becoming a victim of sextortion.
And if they have to learn, if they have to see James' face, if they have to see my tears, I'm going to make sure that it happens if it means that I can save your grandchildren.
Sextortion is when scammers get teens to send them nude photos and extort the kids for money by threatening to show the pictures to family and friends. There were over 33,000 reports of sextortion last year alone. After the hearing, Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois and Republican Chuck Grassley of Iowa both said they're introducing different bills to protect children from those online predators. Meanwhile, over in Australia, as Michael Kastner tells us, that nation's child social media ban is now the law.
It's the first of its kind in the world. The nation is restricting social media accounts for children younger than 16. The ban covers platforms from Meta like Facebook and Instagram, as well as apps like Snapchat, TikTok, X, formerly Twitter, YouTube, and others. The Australian government says it's protecting children from predatory algorithms. I'm Michael Kastner.
An investigation is underway after a drone attempted to bring food and drugs to inmates at a prison in South Carolina. The South Carolina Department of Corrections saying that on Monday morning, a drone dropped Old Bay seasoned crab legs, steak, marijuana, and cigarettes in the prison's outdoor area. The items in the drone were confiscated. No charges have been filed as of yet. And Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy says he has no plans to lower airport food costs. During a recent press conference, he pointed to market demand and supply as a reason behind the costs associated with food in airports. The transportation secretary shared his focus is on providing healthier options for travelers, as there's not many when it comes to reducing prices. Duffy's comments come as Americans have been expressing frustration over high affordability levels. It is a Wednesday morning in the second week of Advent. We're happy you're listening to EWTN. More Catholic Connection coming your way. Stay tuned. It's past the hour. It's a Wednesday, second week of Advent. Hope you're having a great Advent so far. And this next resource, we are all about the resources here at EWTN. Now, don't forget, before we dive into this beautiful book by our guest, we want to remind you of all the wonderful resources we do have at EWTN to help you with your Advent, to make it a very fruitful Advent. We have a great schedule of programming. Just go to EWTN.com/radio, go to schedules, and it'll come up with all the different special programs related to Advent. Also, EWTN.com/Advent to sign up for the free series, free, from our wonderful chaplain, Father Joseph Mary Wolf. It's beautiful. I signed up for it when I first heard about it, and every weekend in my email box, I get a wonderful video link from Father. Very encouraging. And they're very concise, and you don't have to spend a lot of time, although we should be spending a lot of time with God. But if I know we're all busy, so that's what's nice about these videos. Anyway, speaking of resources, this beautiful book, Eight Promises of God, Discovering Hope Through the Beatitudes, is written by Father Mark Mary Ames. So, Father, this book, even though it's about the Beatitudes and not specifically Advent, certainly this can be applied to the time frame that we're in right now, correct? And thanks for joining us, Father. Appreciate it.
Of course, Teresa. And I think it is a great fit for Advent. And the reason I see it is just like a very, very clear like connection there is just, you know, if you look at the Beatitudes and if you they have like a common format, and there's a statement of blessedness, there's some sort of experience of like a privation or something that's not complete yet, and then there's a promise. And so all of the Beatitudes, they give us this place of you're blessed. Like they're essentially promises, and they're statements of like hope. And so it's like, here, you're already blessed. The Lord's going to do something. The Lord's going to provide. And isn't that like the Advent sort of disposition of the whole church? It's this understanding that, yeah, we're already a people of hope. We're still on a journey, and there's something we're still waiting for. We're still in need of, you know, the fullness of God's salvation in our lives. But we have a Savior. And so the church cries, like, Maranatha, come Lord Jesus, which is the prayer of the men and women of the Beatitudes.
Do you think, and this is probably why you wrote the book, that we look at them closely enough? I mean, we grew up with hearing about them, hearing the gospel message over and over again at Mass, and maybe even reading about it in our scriptural study. But do we really kind of embrace the Beatitudes the way they should be embraced?
I don't think so. Certainly the seeds that were planted that ended up giving rise to this book were when I was kind of in my early 20s, hearing a priest actually say from the pulpit, like, that he didn't really understand the Beatitudes. And so, you know, certainly in a lot of spaces, a lot of time and attention has been given to them. But my primary, I guess I'd say I have two reasons why I feel so strongly about the Beatitudes. And first of all, is like we have this language, I believe it was John Paul II, who referred to the Beatitudes as self-portrait of Jesus. And there's this ongoing wrestling that we still have, like, okay, if we follow Jesus, like, what does it look like? And there really is a lot of, like prosperity gospel in a lot of us. And there is this thought that it's like, I follow the Lord, everything's going to work out. And Jesus reveals to us, like, he is the man of Beatitudes. And this is like, a reminder of, for the Christian, our life's going to look like what Jesus looks like. And we see this kind of portrayed, if you will, in the Beatitudes. And the thing that I emphasize about them is that they are promises. And I think we can kind of get hung up on the poor in spirit, those who mourn, and kind of like read them as bad news. But the Beatitudes, like the gospel in itself, is good news. And it's filled with hope, and it's filled with promise from God, you know? And so if he promises something, his promise is always sure.
I want to go back to what you said about kind of looking at this, some of them, in a negative way, because really, if you understand where the church is coming from in helping us to understand the Beatitudes, I learned a lot about blessed are the poor in spirit in doing some further study on this, as theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The poor in spirit is not a bad thing. It means that you are open, or correct me if I'm wrong, but it means that you realize that you need to grow, that you need to really inherit more of the teachings of Christ in the church.
Yeah, and I think I think open is a great word. The word that I tend to sort of gravitate to is dependent. And there's a way in which the poor in spirit, they recognize their limitations and their need, and that which they most have, or they most desire and they most need, they can't give to themselves. And so it has this kind of movement towards a radical openness and orientation to God. It's like, okay, I can't do this. I can't solve this. I can't leave this behind. I can't heal this. I can't save myself. I need you, Lord. And again, this is the disposition of the church in Advent. Like, we need you, Lord. Mm-hmm. But we have him, and we have his sure, like his promise, and we have his presence. So it does open us up to the Lord and give him permission to be the Lord in our lives.
Beautiful. Talking with Father Mark Mary Ames. He's a member of the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal, serving as the Director of Communications and Priestly Studies for the community. His work focusing on helping individuals deepen their relationship with God and understanding the teachings of the church. And we can always learn more about our Lord and, of course, the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. What's really cool about this book, Father, is you're sharing reflections, but also stories to help us understand the Beatitudes more deeply, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this is kind of the Franciscan approach and even kind of charism in our preaching, is that we're called to kind of have a spirituality, which particularly in our poverty, which allows God to like really, really manifest himself and reveal himself in the concrete stuff of our lives and in those we serve. And so certainly I think it's important that when we are talking about, for example, the Beatitudes, is that we root these in like here's what it really looks like. Here's what it looks like with the poor. Here's what it's looked in my own life. Like here's how it remains true like here and now.
Do you have a favorite Beatitude?
It has to be blessed are the poor in spirit, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. Mm-hmm. I certainly think it's great Franciscan, and I think it's kind of actually somewhat of a key and a foundation of the rest of the Beatitudes, and that kind of the language I said. It is, I think, the Beatitude of being a son and daughter of God, of like, okay, Lord, I need you, and I really need you, and I need you in all of these different areas of my life, but I have you, and you are with me. And so I am blessed in my poverty.
So give us some tips before we let you go. We have about 2 minutes left, Father, 2 or 3 minutes left. And how we can apply these, and I know the book is a great resource. How can we apply these to Advent, do you think?
So certainly I think just spending time with them. And probably a good thing to do is to see if there's any of the Beatitudes that we particularly feel like we connect to at this time. And then to kind of see where like what did this look like in the life of Jesus? So we kind of connect the Beatitudes to ourselves, and then we connect them to the life of Jesus, and then we see how the promise was fulfilled for him. Or we can do this with saints as well, see where this promise was fulfilled in certain saints who had a similar experience to us, as a reminder of hope and a reminder of what it looks like. And particularly, I think a lot of folks are going to resonate with blessed are the poor in spirit, and blessed are those mm-hmm. who mourn. And like for those who mourn, like we want to look at Jesus and see how he mourned and what it looked like in his life, for example, before, you know, the tomb of Lazarus. But also, like, we have this promise that every tear will be wiped away, and we see Jesus risen from the dead as the sure sign of our hope. And so I think that's probably how I invite folks to pray with it during Advent.
There's so much, too. I mean, if you look at what's going on in the world, you could talk about, I was just talking about in the news, the situation in Ukraine, with Ukraine and Russia and other problems where there's so many issues as we head, you know, closer toward Christmas, where there's a war and famine and people having so many problems. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Or blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. You know, the Holy Father speaking about the people who are suffering in various parts of the world and calling us to action there. So, you know, if you just look at these and look at your book and then look at what's going on in the world, I think it's a lot. I think it makes a little bit more sense in terms of how to apply them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it can have us feel, I think there's a degree in which like the Lord, like, we can experience the Lord seeing us and speaking his truth and his promise into the real concrete experiences and difficulties and struggles and fears that we have today.
So, Father, how do we get the book? Where do we find it?
The best place to go is ascensionpress.com/promises.
All right. 8 Promises of God. Father Mark Mary Ames has been our guest. A beautiful book and another great resource for you for Advent. And this will be really good for Lent, too. 8 Promises of God, Discovering Hope Through the Beatitudes by Father Mark Mary Ames. We'll be right back on a Wednesday. Wednesday, we do a segment called Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, based on my best-selling Italy book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, published by EWTN. And today, we are taking you to central Italy for the Advent and Christmas season. And in Italy, it's go big or go home. And they do everything so grande, so large, including when they decorate areas with Christmas trees. So we'll start with these two Christmas trees. One in Gubbio. And Gubbio, of course, is also associated with St. Francis of Assisi because that is where he tamed the wolf. There are two churches dedicated to that story of St. Francis and the wolf, one in the actual town of Gubbio, which is very pretty, where there is actually a tomb where they found bones of a large wolf. And then outside of the city of Gubbio, there is another church where St. Francis met and actually tamed the wolf. And that is a very pretty church as well. Both will be featured in my upcoming online series, EWTN series on St. Francis, the unknown St. Francis, going to places that are not all that well known in this amazing saint's life. And that will be coming out next year from EWTN's Mission Advancement, another online learn series. And so in terms of Gubbio, there is a giant, and I mean giant, Christmas tree that is on the mountain in that area, and it's known as the world's largest Christmas tree, actually breaking records, according to Guinness. So the tree is about 2,100 feet high and about 350 meters wide at its base. It consists of 3,000 multicolored lights and 8.5 kilometers, that's about 7 miles, of electric cable placed all the way up the slopes of Mount Ingenio, which towers above the city. And the illumination can be seen up to 30 miles away. That's how large and bright this tree is. And it's really something because the other night, I think it was, what's today, Wednesday? We've been going to all these different events. I'm taking pictures and I'm, you know, documenting it and learning more about it, talking to locals, because a lot of this is going to go, God willing, into my new book on St. Francis, because many of these things are associated with him because of the way he brought us the crash. We'll talk about that in a second. But we were coming up to it. We were coming off the freeway. You have to make a left and go west toward Gubbio. And all of a sudden, it was still about probably a good 10 miles away. And it was as bright as can be, as easy to see. And literally, you don't even have to go into the city of Gubbio, which you should because it's beautiful. But you can pull off the side of the road, which many people do, and just take pictures. It is stunning. So the tradition started when the people of Gubbio decided to celebrate Christmas differently. And this was in 1981 when the first tree was illuminated. Each year on the eve of the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, the Christmas tree is lit. Since then, the tradition is repeated annually thanks to a special committee consisting of volunteers giving up their free time for about 3 months every year. In 2011, the lights were switched on remotely by Pope Benedict XVI using a table computer. And Joan Lewis and I actually talked about this when it happened many years ago. The Pope spoke via a video link to the people of Gubbio from his papal apartment in the Vatican. In 2013, the holiday display used 1,000 lights and stretched more than 1,000 square meters or 10,760 square feet. You can go on, but in 2014, the lights were switched on remotely by Pope Francis using a tablet computer. In 2017, the lights were switched on remotely by an Italian astronaut, Paolo Nespoli. Well, he was at the International Space Station, so this is a big deal. And it really is quite beautiful. And if you don't have any plans to get to Italy anytime soon, do look it up. Just put in Christmas tree of Gubbio because it's fantastic. I also have a commentary on it on my book, Italy's Shrines of Wonders. So that's one Christmas tree in Umbria. Okay. Now we go a little bit south, closer to the Tuscan border, and we go to Lago di Trasimeno or Lake Trasimeno for the Christmas tree on the water. It's about 2 hours from Rome, Trasimeno. And what they do is the same thing. It's all associated with the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. This is what I love. They don't push the holiday too early. So really, there's no lights on here, Christmas lights. Maybe some of the stores, you know, some of the secular places will have a little Christmas tree or some lights on, but even they're pretty subdued. Things don't get really moving until, and it's very appropriate, until the feast or the eve of the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. Usually starts a night or two before, and most of these events run all the way through Epiphany. That's the other thing. In the United States, I think sometimes, how many people do you see in your neighborhood? We see this all the time. Christmas night, they're throwing out their Christmas tree. When for us as Catholics, the Christmas season right on Christmas Day is just beginning. And so Italy really appreciates this, perhaps because it's still a very Catholic country, but they usually begin on December 6th, and then they keep the lights on the Christmas tree until Epiphany. Castiglione del Lago is a beautiful town on Lake Trasimeno, and they have this huge Christmas tree built on water. Very complex and also unparalleled work of electrical engineering, which was fascinating to my husband, who's a retired electrical engineer and specializing in lighting. It's record-breaking again. A full 1,800 meters long, 50 meters wide, supported by 166 poles, and lit by more than 2,600 lamps, powered entirely by renewable sources, the result of the work of about 150 people involved. What's really unique, though, is not so much its impressive size, which is really something, but the beautiful reflections of the lights on the water. It's constantly moving in terms of the reflection, so it's quite beautiful. So again, you can look up the Christmas tree on the lake in Umbria and also the Christmas tree on the mountain in Gubbio. And not to be outdone, nearby Assisi, also on the eve of the Immaculate Conception, has what they call the Folgoraccio, which is a huge bonfire on Mount Subasio at the fortress of Rocca Maggiore, which is very high up. It's above Upper Assisi. It's not too bad of a hike, but it really is something to see. So once the sun goes down, they have this huge bonfire, and the idea is to light the way for the beginning of the Christmas season, of course, Advent, but also welcoming the Blessed Mother because of the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. And you go up there and they have free mulled wine and free chestnuts, cocoa for the kids. And it's just a very lovely local event. And it's very big. I can't even imagine, because we were right there when it was happening, what it looks like from Lower Assisi. It must be something. But these are things you can look up very easily. The Christmas tree in Tresimino, Christmas tree in Gubbio, and the bonfire at Rocca Maggiore in Assisi. This is all, of course, also in my book, Italy Shrines and Wonders. But again, what I think is so special is that they don't push the season too early, and everything is related to the faith. Everything ties in with the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. I really wish we could do more of that in the United States of America. I really wish we would stop pushing Christmas in July and then ending Christmas, barely Christmas morning, and throwing out our Christmas trees that day and making sure that we enjoy it all the way through the Feast of the Epiphany. And in Italy, the Feast of the Epiphany is just as important as Christmas, or equally important to them. And so it's a celebration, but I think they have the right perspective. They focus on the faith, and they don't push anything too soon. Again, Castiglione del Lago, Lake Tresimino, and the big Christmas tree on the water, Gubbio, the Christmas tree on the mountain, and the big bonfire in Assisi. Go big or go home. Christmas in Italy. We'll be right back. Welcome back, 39 minutes past the hour. Heading to Rome, as we always do on Wednesdays, with our very own Joni, Joan Lewis. And I was just telling you, Joni, that during the break, how we made it to Gubbio and also to Tresimino. You have to come up here and see the tree in Gubbio. It's really cool.
It's wonderful. Just I've seen pictures of it, but I'm sorry, the picture, you know, can be 1,000 words, but it's nothing like being in person. Absolutely.
Yeah, and also I know Rome is beautiful at Christmas time. When is the Nativity up and running right now at St. Peter's?
The Nativity is still behind the curtain, so to speak. The tree has been up for quite some time, but the Nativity scene will be unveiled and the tree lit on the 15th at 5 p.m. It's got to be dark, so, you know, it has to be done in the afternoon so you can see the lights and everything, but going to be a beautiful, meaningful nativity scene. And the one that interests me, that I can't wait to hear about, is the one that will be in the Paul the Sixth Hall. Mm-hmm. And that has been given by the country of Costa Rica. And the interesting thing is that's going to show Mary expecting Jesus. And that's going to be up in Advent. And then, of course, by Christmas morning, Mary then will be kneeling at the foot of her newborn son.
Aww.
So I think to see her, you know, pregnant, and then the actual mother, and there's going to be 28,000 colored ribbons, each one representing a life saved from abortion, thanks to prayers.
Yeah,
I know, thanks to prayers and of people in Catholic institutions and that have organized all the prayer gatherings. You know, so I just think that's going to be amazing. Then there's obviously the one outside that will be unveiled, and there is always a nativity scene in St. Peter's Basilica, too. It's usually quite sizable, very beautiful, usually pretty much the same figurines that the Basilica has always had, and that's in the left aisle. I haven't been there in a recent day or two, so I don't know if, you know, they're probably putting it up now as we speak. So if you're in or around the Vatican, you have the possibility. If for the Paul VI hall, you don't just walk in. It's not a place like the Basilica. But if you're going to be at some kind of an audience or maybe a concert, there's, like we had the other night, that nativity scene will also be up. So.
And then they also have the collection of nativities that they're opening. And that's
Monday. Yeah. 100 nativity scenes.
Yeah.
And I haven't gone out yet to visit that or take pictures. I literally was busy all day Monday because it's one of my favorite holidays, just how it's celebrated, holy days, actually, because in the morning there's always a beautiful mass at the North American College, you know, with an American cardinal or archbishop as the main celebrant. And then a couple hundred of us invited to lunch afterwards, always in a very festive, beautifully decorated dining room. And what's wonderful about that is that at the end of the meal, and we got out of there like at 4 o'clock. It was just amazing. Mm. But at the end of the meal, there are three toasts. And the first one is to the North American College. No, I'm sorry, that's the second one. The first one, of course, is to the Holy Father, and then to the North American College, and then to our own country. And it's fun because, of course, the, you know, presenters ask for applause for various people. And by the time we get to the staff that has made the dinner, you would have thought that we were applauding the Holy Father. Huge, lengthy, happy applause, you know. But, I mean, they're behind the scenes. They do the work. They feed 350 people. You know, you and I might wonder what to do. Oh, my gosh, how am I going to seat 6 or 8?
Right.
But anyway, and so then I came home from that, had about 2 hours, then had to leave at 6. I am invited because it's the 8th is the patronal feast day of the North American College, and it's also the patronal feast day, the Immaculata, of the Marian Fathers. And I've known the Marian Fathers for, oh, I don't know how many years, Father Joe Roche, the current head of the community, and is an American. Anyway, they always have Vespers, and that's followed by dinner. And it's a lot of fun because there's so many ambassadors that are friends of the Marians, but because their founder was from Poland, you always are going to have the nuns who cook the meal, and there's enough food for about 150 people, even though there's only like about 40 of us. But the nuns make the most amazing dinner. You would have thought none of us had eaten since Thanksgiving. and the quantity of food and the quality, just totally amazing. And let's see, the Lithuanian ambassador was there with her husband, and the ambassador of Poland was there. And at my right sat a priest, Father Bob. I can't think of his last name. He's a Colombian priest. And he's, as we speak, he's traveling on his way to Pakistan.
Wow.
He's had an absolutely fascinating life, and with a mixture of diplomacy and missionary work. And so the discussion at the table, and our guest celebrant for Vespers was Archbishop John Kennedy, of course, you know, Irish, who works at the, one of the secretaries at the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith. So, and John and I've known each other for, you know, probably 20 years. So a very, very busy day, and that was just Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then keeping up with everything else, the Holy Father, of course, at the Spanish Steps.
You wake up Tuesday morning and find out that, you know, the Ukrainian president is at Castel Gandolfo meeting with the Holy Father. And actually, it is his second meeting with him, and the other one was also at Castel Gandolfo. I think it was in September. I don't remember exactly, but so there's that. And then just what's on the Holy Father's plate, of course, we have to go back. I hope everybody has seen part of it, that stunning, wonderful, vibrant concert on Saturday.
With Michael Bublé?
Oh, my gosh. You know what I did afterwards? I couldn't have gotten into La Victoria for dinner, even if I'd been a part owner. The huge crowd inside and waiting. So I went to another place that you and I know, because I just felt like I needed music. I didn't need lots of people. So I went to Pumarola.
I love that place.
I know. Yeah. And you know what? Every single night, I don't know what time it begins, but until about 10 or 10:30, there's wonderful music just 50 yards, you know, down the street at Piazza Maddalena. And I just felt like I needed music. So I was telling Salih, the owner, of course, about the amazing concert and the Pope singing along. I mean, if there's a first in the history of the Catholic Church, that had to be it. And then one of the waiters came over and he said, "I have never seen so much joy in a person as I see in you." He said, "What an amazing evening you must have had." Mm. So I guess it transmitted itself.
Did you see the interview with Michael Bublé, the interview he did with Vatican News? Did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah, that was sweet.
You really did want to sit down with him, and I just wanted to sit down and say thank you, you know, for that wonderful evening. Well, of course, I was singing along, too, and I stopped singing as soon as I saw the Pope mouthing the words of the song Love, you know, because there are certain generations that we've been around long enough, and that's a song that was so popular, and we do know it. But there's another concert on the 12th in the Vatican, and the Pope will be attending that, and it's in honor, actually, of Pope Leo, and Riccardo Muti, the celebrated Italian conductor, will be leading that and also receiving the Ratzinger Prize. And most people think of the Ratzinger Prize as being given, because it has in the past been given to, like, theologians. But it's people who have made an impact through whatever, you know, they do, and music can certainly be, you know, make an impact. As we saw by the Holy Father's words at the concert, it was just, he said, "Friends, dear friends, music is like a bridge that leads us to God. Music reminds us we are not just this, people with problems in life. We are far more than our problems and our troubles. We are God's beloved children." Mm-hmm. And then he said at the very end, Pope Leo, "Let us be ready to listen to the song of God's love, which is Jesus Christ." Yes, Jesus is God's song of love for humanity. I just shivered when heard those words. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So profoundly beautiful. But I don't know how many people know, Teresa, the Pope plays the piano. He's a marvelous, you know, pianist.
Well, then he should do a concert. Could you imagine? Wouldn't that be neat?
Oh, Lord. You could probably raise $100 million.
I'm serious. If he has a gift from you, obviously he's only been Pope for a few months, but I think we should send him a note and say, hey, do a concert. Pick your perfect, you know, but whom you want to support. And that would be so beautiful to see him sit down and play, wouldn't it?
But, I mean, is there no end to the man's talents?
I don't know. Yeah.
Multilingual, degrees in math, degrees in canon law, and just his own personality, the serenity that with which he does every single thing. But he does it with human joy. I mean, the way he sat in the chair in the Paula 6 Hall for the concert, you watched his hands. He moved his feet, the smile on his face. There would be moments of grateful, you know, serene listening to the music, and then a grin from ear to ear. Just because he's Pope, he can't, you know, show all those wonderful feelings. So it'll probably be very special with Ricardo Muti for sure when we have that concert. And so much we're, you know, leading into in coming days. Next week, actually, we're going to have the Pope with the annual Christmas address to the Roman Curia, to members of the Curia. That'll be a big event, and that's, I think, the 22nd. I don't remember, 22nd or 23rd. So a big agenda, and then obviously all the liturgies relating to Christmas. But I wouldn't be surprised if he goes over, and because he could walk over from his house. I wouldn't be surprised if he went over to see the exhibit of 100 cribs.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's actually more than 100, but I mean, as you know, I think you've seen ones in the past, or, certainly, you know, pictures, made of every kind of material you can think of.
My favorite one was the one made out of macaroni, I have to say.
Macaroni, and there was one made out of pencils.
I mean, pencils, pasta, yeah. Everything, shells, coral,
sure.
Gorgeous.
Like, what can we do that nobody's ever thought of? And, so I'll go and take some pictures and see what is there that nobody ever thought of using before to make a crib, you know. But
yeah, we saw it a few years ago when it was down the street, down the Via della Conciliazione, in that larger hall off to the left if you're looking at St. Peter's. Remember that? Yeah, that was a few years ago.
But it's been under the left-hand colonnade now for quite a few years. It was in different locations in Rome.
Yeah.
And then they've just decided to set it up in the left-hand colonnade, you know. But also in the square, what we will be looking at on Sunday, Gaudete Sunday, is going to be the Bambinelli. That's the third Sunday, third Sunday of Advent, when all the children bring their statues of
the baby Jesus.
Yeah.
Yep. We got to go. We're out of time, but we're going to have to pick this up next week, because I know there's other events that we want to share.
Will.
And also the Holy Father's schedule and more on his comments on the peace situation, or going toward peace, God willing, in Ukraine and Russia.
In Ukraine,
we'll be right back on a Wednesday. Joan Lewis, thank you. We'll be right back. Hope we're having a beautiful Wednesday. In the second hour of Catholic Connection on EW10's Radio Extra, we are going to talk about a beautiful film on Father Flanagan and Boys Town. Edward Morse and Dan Daly will be joining us. We'll be discussing that. That'll be very interesting, I'm sure, and encouraging. And also, we just want to remind you that we will, I think Father Mitch is back with us tomorrow, I'm hoping. I know he was in the Holy Land, so we'll have to catch up with you on that a little bit later. But I did want to say congratulations to another EWTN radio partner, Oklahoma Catholic Radio, serving with 15 stations, celebrating 14 years with us this week. Congrats to Jeff and Kathy Finnell and their great team at Oklahoma Catholic Radio, from your friends and your family here at EWTN. Congratulations. You know, it goes by so fast when you start a Catholic radio station, and then boom, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. It's just amazing. So we have so many great affiliates around the country, many of whom, by the way, are having membership drives this week. So if you are having a drive in your area, if your local Catholic radio station is, please check them out and support them. And of course, keep us between your gas and electric bills, as Mother always used to say as well. All right, so we will be talking about this beautiful film on Father Flanagan and Boys Town. And then in 2 cents, I want to pick up on the readings for today and talk about surrendering to God. I have a theme for Advent, don't you think? Or it should be. We'll be right back. More Catholic Connection coming your way in about 3 minutes.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is a Wednesday, December 10th, hour number two of CC with TT here on EWTN's Radio Extra. We are so glad that you are tuned in. And we do hope you'll enjoy this second hour of the program as much as you did for the first hour. We are going to be discussing, taking a look at the readings today. I love the Advent readings. They're always just so, I don't know, deep. Of course, all of Scripture is deep. But you know what I'm saying? It's just the way the church puts the readings together, the cycle of readings, it's very powerful. So I just thought I'd share some thoughts on the gospel message and the readings for today. And then at the bottom of the hour, we'll have two segments to talk about a wonderful, wonderful film to learn all about the teaching of Father Flanagan and more about Boys Town. So we'll be speaking with both Edward Morris and Dan Daly, and that will be for two segments this morning, starting at 28 minutes past the hour, and then taking us to the top of the hour to wrap up a Wednesday show. So here we are in the second week of Advent. How's it going for you? Just a reminder, resources, resources, resources. You can head to EWTN.com/Advent, and it's not too late to sign up for our free EWTN Learn Advent series from our very own chaplain, Father Joseph Mary Wolfe, who is just such a great speaker and speaks from the heart and is so calming and so peaceful. And it's free, as I said. I can't stress that enough. You don't have to buy anything. You just go to that website, EWTN.com/Advent. Sign up for these wonderful videos, and they will come in your mailbox, your email box, right? And you'll be able to click on the link and hear beautiful words, soothing, peaceful, calming words of wisdom from our very own EWTN chaplain, who's very Franciscan, obviously, with so much insight for Advent. So just, again, one more time, EWTN.com/Advent. Also, EWTN.com/radio, and then go to the schedules section to see the Advent programming that is available for you. Tom Price was on with us, last week, if you remember, talking about all the great programming coming up. So, you know, just want to remind you, because I know we're busy and we forget and we tend not to write things down. Here's something, and then we go back to it later and say, what was that so-and-so said on the radio? I want to check that out. So, again, we're all about giving you resources here at EWTN. Speaking of which, we'll give you some resources on the weather, even though some of it is not that pleasant. The National Weather Service is still tracking an atmospheric river in the northwest and a clipper with winter weather in the northeast. So here is the forecast for your Wednesday morning across the U.S. of A. A prolonged atmospheric river continuing to bring gusty winds, heavy rainfall, which may lead to urban and river flooding with possible landslides and heavy intermountain snow. This is over the Pacific Northwest into the Northern Rockies. And this is going to be with that area of the country, those areas of the country, actually, until tomorrow. We have a clipper crossing the Great Lakes and northeast part of the country into tomorrow as well, with areas of moderate to heavy snow and mixed wintry precipitation. So some rough weather out there. Be careful if you're traveling, but stay tuned right here to EWTN. 3 minutes past the hour on a Wednesday. We are so glad you're listening. It's December 10th, 2025. Let's get started with the news on a Wednesday morning. Pope Leo calling for a just and lasting peace in Ukraine. Molly Hunter tells us a leader of the Worldwide Catholic Church meeting with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Italy yesterday.
They spoke broadly about ending the war, but they also spoke specifically about an issue that we know Pope Leo cares about, that we know is one of the most sensitive issues for President Zelensky, and that is the deportation, the kidnapping, the unlawful transfer of Ukrainian kids to Russia.
In a statement, the Vatican saying the Holy Father reiterated the need for a continuation of dialogue, Zelensky saying he told the Pope about diplomatic efforts of the U.S. to achieve peace. Zelensky traveled to Italy following a trip to London to meet with leaders of the U.K., France, and Germany. Meanwhile, commenting on what he has seen of the U.S. President's peace plan for Ukraine, Vatican News reports the Pope saying it appears that unfortunately what was for many years a true alliance between Europe and the U.S. could undergo a huge change. Speaking to journalists at Castel Gandolfo just outside Rome yesterday evening, the Holy Father responding to questions on several issues, including the ongoing peace proposal for the Russia-Ukraine war put forward by U.S. mediators.
Would you tell us, please, what do you think about Trump's peace plan for Ukraine? Do you think it's fair?
I'd rather not comment on it. I haven't read the whole thing. I think, unfortunately, some of parts of it that I have seen make a huge change in what was for many, many years a true alliance between Europe and the United States. The remarks that are made about Europe also in interviews recently, I think are trying to break apart what I think needs to be a very important alliance today and in the future. So it's a program that President Trump and his advisors put together. And he's the President of the United States, has a right to do that. It has a number of things in it that I think, while perhaps many people in the United States would be in agreement, I think many others would see things in a different way.
Asked about the role of the Holy See in bringing back abducted children from Ukraine, the Holy Father did confirm he had discussed that important issue with the Ukrainian leader. The bankruptcy case involving the Archdiocese of New Orleans is finally at an end. U.S. District Judge Meredith Grabil had approved a settlement, including $230 million for survivors of clergy sexual abuse. Survivor Tim Trahan says he's relieved.
The pain and the suffering that I've been through will now enable me just to be a stronger person.
The Archdiocese filing for bankruptcy back in 2020 in the face of hundreds of abuse claims. And a new lawsuit is aiming to stop Delaware's End of Life Options Act from becoming law. That legislation was signed by Democratic Governor Matt Meyer back in May and would allow terminally ill adults with less than 6 months to live choose medical aid in dying. A local TV station reporting the plaintiffs include several disability and patient advocacy groups arguing that doctors are not required to help a patient obtain alternative services to medical aid in dying, adding the measure would also deny guaranteed protections under the American with Disabilities Act to patients with life-threatening disabilities. 11 states and Washington, D.C. currently have so-called physician-assisted suicide measures in place. One student is dead, another is hurt after a shooting Tuesday at Kentucky State University. The Frankfort Police Department saying a suspect is in custody, facing murder and assault charges. He's identified as an Indiana man who does not attend the university. The school has canceled classes for the rest of the semester, and the Kentucky governor is asking for prayers for all those impacted. Mark Mayfield tells us President Trump kicking off his national tour touting his economic agenda with a campaign rally-style speech in Pennsylvania yesterday.
Trump spoke to a large crowd of supporters in Mount Pocono Tuesday night, saying his administration saved America.
They gave you high prices. They gave you the highest inflation in history, and we're bringing those prices down rapidly. Lower prices, bigger paycheck.
The president went on to say that his tariffs have brought in trillions to the U.S. and pushed companies to invest in American manufacturing once again. Polls show Americans say affordability is out of control, and a majority of voters are starting to blame Trump. The White House says Pennsylvania is one of several stops planned across the country where Trump will talk about the economy. I'm Mark Mayfield.
President Trump not ruling out sending troops to Venezuela. Asked about the possibility in an interview with Politico, Trump saying, "I don't comment on that, but I wouldn't say that one way or the other." Trump also saying the Venezuelan president's days are numbered. Tensions between the U.S. and Venezuela have escalated since the Trump administration began conducting military strikes on alleged drug boats in the Caribbean. Trump telling Politico he would consider taking similar action on Mexico and Colombia to reduce fentanyl trafficking. And Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis being threatened with a lawsuit after designating one of the country's largest Muslim groups as terrorists. DeSantis saying the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, is a foreign terrorist organization, and he looks forward to a day in court for the battle.
But we welcome that. I mean, you know, we did do the designation for both the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE. This is something that has been a long time coming. I know the federal government's now working in a similar direction.
DeSantis also saying there is a strong basis for the terror designation.
There's no question. A lot of it is financial. That's why I think a lawsuit is something that we very much welcome. That will give the state of Florida discovery rights to be able to subpoena the bank records.
DeSantis' executive order alleging that CARE has ties to Hamas, the militant Palestinian group that attacked Israel on October 7th in 2023. The group also involved in the filing of a federal lawsuit against Texas's Governor Greg Abbott after he declared the Texas CARE chapter a foreign terrorist organization. Two South Jersey brothers facing serious charges from Homeland Security officials after what the agency says were threats posted against ICE on social media. Ricardo Antonio Roman Flores and his twin brother Emilio were arrested yesterday near Atlantic City. Homeland Security saying the brothers posting an online threat to shoot ICE on site. They also claim the pair threatened a DHS assistant secretary, agents and local police using a SWAT team to arrest them. Emilio is charged with two weapons counts, criminal coercion, cyber harassment, and more. They're both charged with conspiracy to make terroristic threats as well. And Congress is trying to tackle the growing problem of online predators. Yesterday, the Senate Judiciary Committee holding a bipartisan hearing on protecting children from online sex predators, hearing emotional testimony from parents such as Tamaya Woods, whose children committed suicide after being sextorted.
We can make sure that we have your back no matter what. I would give anything to have my son back.
Woods' 17-year-old son committed suicide after becoming a victim of sextortion.
And if they have to learn, if they have to see James' face, if they have to see my tears, I'm going to make sure that it happens if it means that I can save your grandchildren.
Sextortion is when scammers get teens to send them nude photos and extort the kids for money by threatening to show those pictures to family and friends. There were over 33,000 reports of sextortion last year. After the hearing, Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois and Republican Chuck Grassley of Iowa said they're introducing three bills to protect children from online predators. And speaking of those new measures, Senator Grassley is saying their legislation would criminalize those who intentionally coerce minors to commit suicide or physical harm.
I think it's pretty darn clear. These sentencing laws go way back to the early 2000s, and we've had an increase in technology. Laws haven't kept up with the new technology, and it's a real threat to our children.
It would also update federal sentencing laws, which he says online groups have been exploiting. And Michael Kastner tells us in Australia, social media now is banned for children. It's the law of the land down under.
It's the first of its kind in the world. The nation is restricting social media accounts for children younger than 16. The ban covers platforms from Meta like Facebook and Instagram, as well as apps like Snapchat, TikTok, X, formerly Twitter, YouTube, and others. The Australian government says it's protecting children from predatory algorithms. I'm Michael Kastner.
An investigation is underway after a drone attempted to bring food and drugs to inmates at a prison in South Carolina. The South Carolina Department of Corrections says that on Monday morning, a drone dropped Old Bay seasoned crab legs, steak, marijuana, and cigarettes in the prison's outdoor area. The items in the drone were confiscated. So far, no charges have been filed. And Chris Caraggio tells us that millions of student loan borrowers may have to start making payments pretty soon.
The Trump administration announced a proposed settlement with Missouri to end a Biden-era program that paused payments. Borrowers who are enrolled in the Saving on a Valuable Education plan will have to choose a new repayment plan. An appeals court sided with Republican-led states and blocked the SAVE plan in February. Republicans argued the program was an illegal attempt by the Biden administration to circumvent a Supreme Court ruling that blocked his plan to cancel student loan debt in 2023. I'm Chris Caraggio.
More Catholic Connection coming your way. It's 13 minutes past the hour on this Wednesday, December 10th. Stay tuned. Minutes past hour. It's a Wednesday morning. It's December 10th, the middle of the second week of Advent 2025 here on EWTN's Catholic Connection, EWTN Radio Extra for the second hour more specifically. Have you done the readings for today yet? Well, if you haven't, you will certainly, I believe, get a lot out of them. I love the Advent readings. They're always, to me, I don't know, so powerful and deep. And again, as I was saying, the cycle of readings for the church is just a phenomenal thing to really pray over and think about. So the first reading is from the book of the prophet Isaiah. To whom can you liken me as an equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these things. He leads out their army and numbers them, calling them all by name. By his great might and the strength of his power, not one of them is missing. Why, O Jacob, do you say and declare, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord and my right is disregarded by my God? Do you not know, or have you not heard? The Lord is the eternal God, creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint nor grow weary, and his knowledge is beyond scrutiny. He gives strength to the fainting. For the weak he makes vigor abound, though young men faint and grow weary, and youth stagger and fall. They that hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar as with eagle's wings. They will run and not grow weary, walk and not grow faint. And then the gospel for today is from the Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 11. Jesus said to the crowds, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." I wonder how many of us take time to think about all the imagery that Jesus gives us in his teachings. He was such a great motivational speaker, the greatest that ever walked the earth, because he was able to take images and experiences of the people of his day and use them in analogies for scripture. And so what are we talking about? I did a whole chapter on this in my book, God's Bucket List. What is a yoke? Do we know what a yoke is? It's kind of an old-fashioned term. It's a wooden beam. This is the definition from the internet. Used to join a pair of oxen or other animals for the purpose of pulling a load, such as a plow or a cart. It symbolizes servitude, burden, and partnership, illustrating the relationship between humans and God, as well as the concept of being united under a common purpose or burden. The term is also used metaphorically in the Lord's teachings, where he invites believers to take up his yoke upon them, suggesting a relationship of guidance and support. Overall, the yoke representing both a physical object and a deeper spiritual truth within biblical context. Now, I think if you look at the gospel and think of the word yoke, and then go back to the first reading from Isaiah, where he's talking about, the prophet is talking about being raised up and soaring on eagle's wings. The Lord is the eternal God, creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint nor grow weary, and his knowledge is beyond scrutiny. He gives strength to the fainting. For the weak he makes vigor abound. Though young men faint and grow weary, and youth stagger and fall, they that hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar as with eagle's wings. They will run and not grow weary, walk and not grow faint. Now, what God is telling us here, and this is my own thoughts about it, and through prayer and discernment and discussion with my spiritual director and my husband, the deacon, and just my own, you know, just thinking and praying about this, and my own experience. Oftentimes we look at our relationship with God. If we really take God seriously, putting him at the head of our life, sometimes we hold back because we're afraid God's yoke, right, is going to be too much of a burden for us. Jesus says, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." What he means is what he has in store for us in terms of the road on which he's walking side by side with us. What he has in store for us is not going to burden us. It is not going to bring us down. It is going to fulfill us and raise us up, as it says in the first reading. And we will soar as with eagle's wings. Why will we soar? Well, first of all, because we're bonding ourselves, connecting ourselves with that yoke to Christ. And secondly, and equally as important, when we are saying yes to the yoke and the burden from Christ, we are saying yes to God's will for our lives. And we're not going to soar or go anywhere or get off the ground at all if we don't accept God's plan for our lives and submit to that burden, air quotes here, or yoke. It is not a heavy burden. It is not one that is going to hold us back. It is one that is going to allow us to find rest, but also it is going to allow us to find a new life in Christ that is going to be better than anything that we had in store for ourselves. It might be different, but it's going to be better. And oftentimes we get stuck and don't want to let go and let God and offer it up and put it at the foot of the cross, as my mother told me all the time growing up, because we're fearful. The devil that we know right now is better than the devil we don't know. Or perhaps we have created what we believe is the plan that we want for our lives. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with it or that we're, you know, conducting any type of a sinful behavior. It could be a very, very fine goal that you have, something you want to do, something you feel strongly about. But it's not what God has in mind for you. He has a different role. He has a different yoke he wants you to take upon your shoulders. Because you will find that his yoke is easy and his burden light. And I'm speaking from personal experience. The yoke that I was carrying in terms of insisting that I could do what I wanted to do in the secular media, to go on the way I was going on, to keep one foot in the media world and one foot in the Catholic world, it was making me miserable. And it was holding me back from what God had in store for me. And it wasn't revealed like overnight. It is a process. And that's what's so beautiful about this analogy of the yoke, because as you heard in that description, it's a journey. And a yoke is used for farming, right? And so you are moving along. You are working with the Lord. You are hopefully growing. And yet it feels so freeing when you just let it go and say, okay, Lord, uncle, I give up. You take the, you know, Jesus take the wheel, as Carrie Underwood so famously sings. He's in charge. And it doesn't mean that we are not expected to do our part, or we just sit back and do nothing and blindly say, okay, I'm leaving it all up to God. God gave us a brain, and he puts certain things on our hearts. And sometimes we don't accept that. We fight that. But deep down, whatever God is asking you to take upon you, whatever yoke, whatever burden, it is going to be easy and light. Does it mean that we're not going to have suffering? No. But it means you will be at peace because you are going in the correct direction. Once I said to God, okay, I'm going to walk away from the secular media, there was such a peace, even though I had no job lined up. I had no idea what I was going to do. But the peace of letting go and letting God, I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to pray and I'm going to look around and I'm going to try to use my skills until God gives me some other direction. But I knew what he wanted me to do. I knew he wanted me to let go. Are you willing to let go of your yoke, of the direction in which you're going? You're steering things here, Missy Pants. So let's, you know, get in gear with me and let's see how it goes. But he can't do that unless you take his yoke upon you and learn from him. He is meek. He is humble. He is loving. He has the best plan for us. And whatever it is, trust me, brothers and sisters, it's so much better than what you think you're supposed to be doing. Trust him. His yoke is easy, his burden light, and you will soar on eagle's wings. We'll be right back. Well, we're already having fun, and we haven't even begun the interview yet. I was talking during the break, having a delightful conversation with our in-studio guests. They're going to be on Father Mitch Live this evening, Edward Morse and Dan Daly, talking about an amazing film all about Father Flanagan and Boys Town. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us in studio this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. So let me go to Edward. I'll go to you first. Let's talk a little bit about how you got involved with this project, first of all.
Well, I'm part of the Father Flanagan League, and our then Archbishop put me on the league. I'm a Catholic convert, and I just gradually was drawn toward Father Flanagan, but it goes all the way back to my youth. My father was a World War II vet, and he used to have Army buddies. If they were Catholic, we would go visit Boys Town. And so circling back, you know, 50 years later, we have an opportunity to work on the cause for sainthood and to promote his heroic virtue, and it just seems like the right thing to do and something I'm really excited about.
Dan, tell us about your connection.
I spent 43 years as a psychologist at Father Flanagan's Boys Home.
Wow.
A variety of roles, and Father Flanagan was all around me. He was all around me as a kid. My parents were donors and talked about Father Flanagan, an Irish Catholic family growing up, and kind of an Irish Catholic ghetto where I lived. And, you know, so Father Flanagan's been part of my life for my life and my career.
So it must mean, and I'll go back to you, Edward, so much to be involved, not only in Boys Town, but just this film and this effort to get the word out.
Well, it is a great opportunity. We have a wonderful, Spirit Juice Studios has been just wonderful.
Oh, they're fantastic. They're great.
And
yeah.
Jonathan Rumi is our narrator, and they've done a wonderful
job.
And
you have Jesus as your narrator. Really? Seriously?
I know.
Can you go wrong?
It was wonderful to have him. We had a premiere a year ago. The film, the theater premiere was at Boys Town campus, and he was able to join us there. And we had quite an experience, but... you know, it's a great story to tell. It's uplifting. It elevates the church. It elevates the priesthood. It elevates all of us to watch faith in action. And that is what this film is about. And so it's great to be a part of it.
Dean, how do people access the film now?
You can go on to fatherflanagan.com, you know, and that'll take you to see the film. But it's right now, it's running on several platforms. It's on Apple TV, it's on Amazon Prime, and it's about to be on EWTN.
There you go. There you go. Now, do we have dates as to when it's going to air on EWTN?
This Saturday at 7 p.m., I believe.
There you go. Bingo. This Saturday at 7 p.m. will air on EWTN, and you can watch this beautiful film. Okay, let's play, as we say, a trailer in the biz and just give our listeners a tease, as we say, and give them encouragement to watch the film this weekend right here on our very own EWTN. Roll it, as we say, Richard.
My boys and I want to bring you a special message of peace.
Father Flanagan is an American success story. Came on Ellis Island with nothing in his pockets. He was somebody that saw the common humanity that we all share as brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ.
He was raising these boys not to be just good, but to be strong.
It wasn't just that those who disagreed with Father Flanagan were willing to sort of sit in the background. They tried to get in his way.
So he moved to the middle of a cornfield and started his own town.
When you examine why he did what he did and the conflicts that he took on, you're going to see the face of Jesus Christ in his work.
Wow. So the website is fatherflanaganfilm.com. The film is entitled The Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story, narrated by Jonathan Rumi. We're talking with Edward Morris and Dan Daly about this beautiful film. They'll both be on EWTN Live tonight with Father Mitch Pacwa, talking about the movie, talking about, of course, Father Flanagan, and also reminding folks to watch on Saturday at 7 p.m. Edward, what would you like people to know about Father Flanagan? Is there something maybe, I mean, he's well known in the Catholic world, of course, but what, is there something maybe unique, a lot unique, but what would you say people need to know about him?
I think people need to know that this was a man of persistence. And, you know, he had to overcome difficulties. He was born prematurely, and so he was dogged with some health issues his whole life. He had to persist and overcome those health issues. He had to overcome resistance from people who didn't like the work that he was doing, that opposed his Catholicity and opposed his work doing interreligious and interracial activities. And so, and he persisted. You know, I think few people don't know also that he was called upon by our government to be an advisor to help the orphan children that were created in World War II. And so he traveled across the globe. So his message and his insights were instrumental in a global movement of caring for the least of these among us. And I think all those things make him quite an extraordinary human being.
And Dan, what about his involvement with rescuing Japanese Americans in the internment camps? That's something I don't think a lot of people know about either.
No, many people don't know about it. And obviously, with World War II, it would have been unpopular. A lot of what Father Flanagan did was unpopular, even though it was the right thing to do. And these were Japanese American citizens. They weren't undocumented immigrants, so to speak. Right. They were people who had been producing in society, and they were put in these internment camps. And he brought many of them to Boys Town as a staff member, as a worker. They might have worked on the Boys Town farm, or they might have worked with Boys Town children. And he gave them a purpose and a place of safety during a period of time that their lives were in turmoil due to no fault of their own.
Edward, how do you think we could learn from him right now, given all the division in our country? The fact that he worked with so many people, as you said, from different backgrounds and religions and creeds, how do you think we could learn from him here?
Well, I just think we learn by stories and we learn by examples, and his story really does show that one person with faith can move mountains. And what's amazing about him, though, is he had ways of bringing others into his work. And so this idea of reaching out and getting help, one of his early assistants was a man named Henry Monsky. He's a graduate of, I teach at Creighton University Law School. He's a graduate of my law school. I walk by his picture every day on the way to my office. And, you know, it's this willingness to reach out to others and bring them into what we find as common cause, and that's serving the needs that all of us can recognize from whatever background we come from. And so I think that's a lesson for us all.
Yeah, it sounds like Mother Teresa is seeing Christ in everyone, right, Dan?
That's exactly right. Interesting enough, Mother Teresa came to Boys Town on two occasions.
And let's talk about that after the break. Sorry, I'm so excited to talk to you. I forgot that we have music playing. We have to take a break. So we'll continue the discussion. We're having a fascinating conversation with Edward Morris and Dan Daly. And again, they're going to be on EWTN Live tonight with Father Mitch. Don't miss it. Also, don't miss the airing of the film Heart of a Servant this weekend on EWTN. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for joining us on a Wednesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. We are talking about a beautiful film, Heart of a Servant, the story of Father Flanagan. And it is going to be airing on EWTN this weekend on Saturday. Gentlemen, it is 7 p.m., correct?
That's right.
Okay, 7 p.m. Now, before the break, Dan, you were mentioning, because it reminded me, reading about him and doing some research, he reminds me a lot of Mother Teresa, the way he was able to reach out to so many different people and so many walks of life and backgrounds. And you mentioned that Mother Teresa came to Boys Town.
Yes, she did. Mother Teresa was one of Father Flanagan's role models. He very much followed and was inspired by her. And she came to visit one time just to see what he was doing with his kids, you know, and to learn from him. And, of course, he wanted to learn from her as he had his whole life. And then later on, she came and received the Father Flanagan Service to Youth Award. This was after Father Flanagan's death, but I was present at that ceremony. This would have happened, I don't have the exact date, but it would have happened probably in the late 70s, early 80s before she died.
So let's talk, Edward, about the cause for canonization. What do we know so far? Where is it at this point?
Well, he's a servant of God at this point, and the cause, the positio, and the documents that have been submitted are now before the dicastery for the causes of the saints. And so we're simply in a position of waiting and praying. And so we're looking, hopefully, perhaps even this year, we might have a determination of venerability, and we're also in the process of gathering information about miracles. You know, there is a groundswell of devotion for Father Flanagan that extends across the globe, and people turn to him for intercession and prayer, and we're receiving some reports of people who have experienced miracles. And, you know, the definition of miracles in the canon law is very narrow. So I believe there have been many miracles, but it's the kind of miracles that we see and understand to be miracles, yet maybe not proven up in the way that the rigorous way that the church requires for sainthood.
It's interesting because I'm sure you're familiar, in the Detroit area, we have Blessed Solanus Casey, who was beatified a few years ago. And it's so similar in terms of Father Flanagan, because they both, just like Mother Teresa, reached out to so many different people. I remember when I did a story on, I've done many stories on Father Solanus because it's so close to where I live in southeastern Michigan. But people from all different religions would go, whether it would get help from the Capuchins there, but they heard about, you know, Solanus Casey, and they would go to talk to him. And the miracles that were coming in, reports of miracles, of course the church is investigating. He's beatified now, but he has that one step to go for sainthood. But there was very, very different backgrounds. Not all Catholic, not all Christian, which I think is a testament to the type of people they are.
Oh, I think
Dan, I'll go to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Father Flanagan, there's been a gentleman from Chile, Father Hurtado, who came to visit Father Flanagan in the 1930s. And he has been canonized with his work with children, but it was all based on his correspondence with and his using Father Flanagan as his role model on how to form similar interactions with boys and girls in Chile.
So Father is getting all these people to become saints, and he's still waiting. What's going on? This is not fair. I'm just saying. Can we move it along a little quickly? I get very impatient, and this is just such a wonderful story. But it is kind of interesting, though, isn't it? I mean, the way things are working.
No, it is very, very interesting, and we find the same humor that you were just talking about in that, because there's been many clergy, men and women around the world, who have followed in Father Flanagan's footsteps, and several of them are in the queue, so to speak, you know, for moving on up. Yeah,
it's just interesting because I'm sure Father Flanagan is saying in heaven, you know, give it to somebody else. I'm very, very humble and whatnot. But of course, here in, on earth, knowing the good he's done, we want him to become a saint a lot more quickly than the church may do something. So let's talk a little bit. And Dan, I'll go back to you. We know his background, his humble beginnings, you know, his Irish-American background. What else do you think inspired him to help the disadvantaged?
Well, you know, he was very much a student of St. John Bosco, for instance, the Italian boy who also worked with street urchins. And Father John Bosco was a role model for Father Flanagan. There also was this Irish, I'm going to use the term rebellion in him. He knew that what happened to the Irish people was wrong, and what happened to the Catholic Church in Ireland was wrong. And he had this spirit of rebellion about him. And when he saw children being mistreated in America or anywhere else, it stimulated this Irish will to take on the cause and to push it through. And that was very much part of his spirituality, is that when I know something needs to be done differently, I need personally to take responsibility for that and to see it through. And you see that time after time after time on hundreds and hundreds of kind of case studies of boys that he rescued from a punitive penal system or punitive programs around the country and around the world.
We're talking with Edward Morris and Dan Daly about Father Flanagan, his cause for canonization, also the beautiful film that is going to be airing on EWTN this Saturday at 7 o'clock, and it came out last year. It's narrated by Jonathan Rumi, of course, who plays Jesus in the wonderful, very popular series Chosen. Beautiful story of a man and his mission to help those who are underprivileged, and it continues today. Edward, let me talk to you a little bit about what do you think Father Flanagan, given the state of our world and everything going on with young people today, what do you think he would say or see as some of the biggest challenges we're having right now?
That's a good question. Well, I think one of the biggest challenges is probably the absence of love. And I'm reminded of St. John of the Cross. He says, where love is absent, bring it, and you will draw love. And Dan's point about Father Flanagan avoiding punitive approaches. I think it's especially apt with children. I mean, we all need discipline, but and we have some serious problems, no question about that, in our country and in our world. But this idea that, first of all, I think he understood the truth and the power of the gospel as being more powerful than hate, more powerful than fear. And I think the motivation, the love is the most powerful. I tell my students, I said, the second most powerful force in the world is incremental change. And often they'll ask, well, what's the most powerful? And I say, it's love. Why? Because God is love. And right. So this power of love and that transformational power, I think, is the key to a lot of our problems. And it really does involve some very simple actions by the faithful of doing the simple and good things that need to be done, doing the next right thing. It really is that simple to change the world.
Dan, what do you think?
You know, I'm a psychologist, and I could bore you and make it sound very complicated, but the brilliance of Father Flanagan is he had two principles: love the child and teach him to love God. And what he believed was that if a boy had faith, and in his time he worked with boys because those were the street kids. Girls were not street kids. Boys Town now is boys and girls. But what Father Flanagan believed is that a relationship with God and a faith relationship with a church, Catholic church, Jewish church, whatever, that the teaching of what that relationship to a religion would bring would be the salvation of the child. And so I think that's part of what the world needs right now. They need us to simplify this into how we treat one another and how we relate to God and our faith.
So what are you seeing, Dan, as a psychologist right now? How do you think Father would react in terms of the social media crisis and mental health crisis? Do you think he would say exactly what you just said, repeat it to us? I definitely do.
And he would, regarding the social media with all the bullying that happens online, that would be anathema to Father, Father Flanagan. He would speak directly to that point. But I also guarantee you he would be online. He was an innovator. He had his own radio talk show back in the 30s.
Right.
And he believed in technology. He believed in science. He believed in research. But he had a unique way of communicating it very clearly. But he would be online talking about what is happening online that is negative for children. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look at Fulton Sheen. He used the media so wisely, right? He was one
beautifully
of the greatest,
yes,
broadcasters, and I mean, had an incredible gift for speaking. Talking with Edward Morris and Dan Daly about Father Flanagan, his cause for canonization, as well as a beautiful film about Father Flanagan, which is going to be airing on EWTN, Heart of a Certain, the story of Father Flanagan. And it's going to be really great. Don't forget to tune in tonight to Father Mitch's program, Father Mitch Live, on EWTN on Wednesday evenings, because you're both going to be on with him, which will be very, very exciting. We have a few minutes left. Any wrap-up thoughts? And Edward, I'll go to you first in terms of what you would like people to know, not only about the film, about Boys and Girls Town, but also about Father Flanagan.
I think one of the things I would like to emphasize is just the commitment that he had to those young people was a holistic one. And it really did involve their intellectual development. It involved their training and discipline. But it also involved experiencing beauty in the world, experiencing music, experiencing literature. And I really think that our whole educational system can benefit from that holistic approach that Father Flanagan had. And he also believed very profoundly and strongly in the transformational power of truth and just the power of the gospel itself. And
what
that's why I think the interreligious aspect is, hey, just draw people in. Let them encounter the truth. Let them encounter the gospel, and it will change lives. I mean, I feel like I'm a product of that myself.
Beautiful. Dan?
Father Flanagan had a quote that I always used in my work at Boys Town, which was, he said, "My work will continue whether or not I am here, not because it's my work, but because it's God's work."
Yes.
And that was an enormously powerful thing to say to boys and girls, but it was fantastically powerful to say to staff, because when someone is working with a juvenile delinquent who's angry, abandoned, abused, there's lots of unattractive moments in interacting with a child like that who's had difficult circumstances. And to have a role model like Father Flanagan and words like Father Flanagan spoke in his life really helps people who are in difficult circumstances to keep it up, stay on the path, pursue the cause, so to speak. And so I think Father Flanagan really is completely relevant today and ought to become a saint, and that's the kind of saint we need right now.
Yeah. And Dan, don't you think too that at the end of the day, young people, kids can they can sense sincerity, right?
They sense the authenticity,
authenticity and
what is right in front of them. And Father Flanagan was such an authentic individual. And again, a role model for us who are doing that work to try to be a semblance of that, at least.
Well, we've truly enjoyed spending time with both of you, Edward Morris and Dan Daly. Thank you so much for your great work with Father Flanagan. And again, the movie will be airing this weekend on EWTN. And don't forget to tune in tonight to Father Mitch Pacwa Live. And that will be this evening. And it's going to be a great show. Again, Edward Morris and Dan Daly, thank you, gentlemen. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be right back on Catholic Connection. Stay tuned. Again, don't forget, Father Mitch is live tonight with Edward and Dan, our two guests in the second hour today of Catholic Connection. All about the new Father Flanagan film. Came out last year, doing really well, and it's going to be airing right here on EWTN this weekend. So tomorrow, Father Mitch Pacwa, speaking of which, will be back with us. So excited, Cultural Connections. He is fresh back from the Holy Land. We'll get an update from him on how that went. And also, two other really important interviews. Alyssa Golub is a co-founder of a group called Right Now. She's based in Canada, and she went undercover at abortion facilities. And you will be, well, maybe not so much, shocked at what she found, at how loosey-goosey they are when it comes to late-term abortions, even though they all say, all those pushing abortion in Canada, oh, late-term abortions are very, very rare. Not so much. And she'll talk with us about what she discovered. And then Dr. Pia De Seleni, we are going to be taking a look at the latest statements from the Vatican regarding the female diaconate. Now, they have said no to that more than once. They said no again last week. But then they also said they're keeping it open for more discussion. So Pia is a moral theologian and a former chancellor in a major diocese, and she's very well versed in this area. She's been studying this topic for a while, and she'll give us an update. All that on a Thursday morning edition. Have a great day. God bless you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.